He's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká.
Here's Raul. Zidane. Oh, fantastic.
Bein Sports Connect, Australia's number one football streaming destination. The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good afternoon and a warm welcome to you. This is the Euro Show on FNR Football Nation Radio, and we are the voice of football in Australia. Adriano Del Monte here with you today as we review Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, the mammoth semi-final second leg clash in the UEFA Champions League. The Spaniards are through to another final again, a third straight final. Records have tumbled. We'll bring you all those figures with a result like this. 2-2 it finished. Real Madrid advanced narrowly, knocking out the fancy Germans, Munich, who miss out on another final. So Spain's dominance in Europe continues. All the fallout, all the action from that to come. One semi-final remaining, of course, in the competition. Roma and Liverpool. Roma with it all to do. Liverpool with a three-goal lead, certainly in the box seat to join Real Madrid in this season's final. Full preview of that fixture to come as well. We'd love to hear from you, fans of Madrid, Munich, Roma, Liverpool, or just European football in general. Give us a call at any stage if you like. 99 44 99 99, the number to do so. Or you can tweet us at any stage. We are at FNR underscore radio. Before we get to the action from this morning, welcome to my co-hosts Matt Ruick and Rick D'Andrea. Guys, we previewed the match in depth yesterday. Before we get to that action, a quick word. Real Madrid, we said they might just find a way, and might just find a way they did, because over the two legs, for me, Matt, completely outplayed but got the result and narrowly go through.
Yeah, they found a way, so you can say on the one hand that's what champions do, and for the third consecutive time they're in the Champions League final, and no matter if they play AS Roma or if they play Liverpool, they will go in it as huge favourites to win it three times in a row. So that is a good quality, and they seem to be very consistent in their performance. However, if you see those two legs, I think there is just one word, and that is luck. I think Bayern Munich were way better throughout both legs. And even yesterday, there were a couple of things. I mean, we're going to analyze it in depth a bit later, but the referee played a role, I believe. There are some mistakes that usually don't happen to Bayern Munich. Let's say Neuer is in goal and not Ulreich. I don't think that 2-1 for Real Madrid would have been scored. And like, it just all came together for Bayern Munich. A little bit of unlucky injuries too. But sometimes statistics lie. I think in this case they don't. So Bayern Munich had way more possession, even in Madrid, way more shots, way more chances. And Real Madrid, I think in this case, were just lucky.
It just seemed to me that ultimately Real Madrid are vulnerable, but at the same time are dominant. And by that I mean they know exactly what is needed and what is required to get the win. But they really showed that they can be taken apart and beaten. And Bayern Munich, unluckily, should be through to the final.
2-2 on the night, 4-3 on aggregate. Real Madrid advance to a 16th European Cup or UEFA Champions League final.
Good take by Lewandowski. Aliso's in there as well. And it's the opening goal, and it's Kimmich again. Well, you certainly felt that to have any chance tonight, Bayern had to score first. And they've done just that. And Joshua Kimmich is taking this semi-final from Bayern's point of view by storm. Marcelo, it's a lovely cross. Benzema plants in the header. They always score at the Bernabeu. And the equaliser, much heralded here to quell some of those early nerves. Both these famous clubs still believe they've got a strong chance of getting through to this season's Champions League final. Made the 26 in Kiev, but that's not going to help. Oh, it's a gift for Benzema, a complete gift. How on earth has that happened? A loose back pass, a complete goalkeeping howler. And Benzema was alert, where Bayern were certainly not. Lisa, worse than it was. And here's Sula cropping up wide right. Measured cross. James goes again and scores. Don't rule out Bayern. James Rodriguez, owned by Real Madrid, loaned to Bayern Munich, has scored in the Bernabeu. It's a big story in itself, but the goal in the context of the tie is huge.
Huge, but not enough. 2-2. It finishes on the night 4-3 on aggregate. So despite being outplayed statistically, Real Madrid just do enough to progress to a 16th Champions League final or European Cup final. Some figures from the night. Look, many will be saying that Bayern Munich were very unfortunate, and that they were. But for Real Madrid, a third straight Champions League final, just the third team to do that in the Champions League era. Milan between 93 and 95, Juventus 96 to 98, the only other two clubs to have done that. Zinedine Zidane also a part of that Juventus side. So Zidane creates some history by becoming the first player and coach to do that in the UEFA Champions League era. First club to reach three straight European Cup finals for the second time. The second time in a row that they've eliminated Bayern Munich. And Zinedine Zidane, in nine knockout ties as manager of Real Madrid, has never been eliminated. In fact, he's never been eliminated in the competition because his previous two attempts have ended up with the trophy. So statistically, for Real Madrid, a remarkable achievement for them. They're through to another final, of course, 16th final being a record with all those wins as well. They'll be going for a 13th crown in this competition, a 7th Champions League final. So some people say that Real Madrid are so good statistically in Europe because of their dominance at the start, but now a 7th UEFA Champions League final. So in the modern era of the game, they've been there more than anyone. Their dominance at this level continues, but certainly plenty of luck on their side. The goalkeeping howler by Bayern Munich is where we'll start. What a way to start the second half. You come out at halftime, 1-1 in the game, absolutely in the tie. And for that to happen, that must have been a huge dent in the confidence of the visiting Germans. Credit to them for responding, but what a difficult way after a spirited first half to get that second half underway.
Yeah, terrible. So it's exactly what you wouldn't want to happen. I mean, Tolisso, with all due respect, and Ulreich, if everybody's fit, they're both not in the top 11 of Bayern Munich, in my opinion. Tolisso, you can argue, he's still a young player and he will develop, but I think if Javi Martinez is fully fit and didn't carry an injury the couple of weeks before, he would play in his position. I think it's a 50-50 thing. I think Tolisso's pass was very, very poor. So it was way too slow, and it put Ulreich under a lot of pressure. Still, he had a lot of time to just get rid of the ball and just kick it in the stands or anywhere he wanted to. But for some reason, he had a brain fade and thought, hey, I have to pick this ball up, otherwise Benzema will be first to the ball and he will just kick into the open goal. That's exactly what happened in the end. So Ulreich, I guess, he was in two minds. He wanted to kick it away first, and then he saw the fastly approaching Benzema, and he just panicked a little bit. And instead of, he might have just should have picked it up. I mean, it would have been an indirect free kick from a very, very good position, but there's still a bigger chance of saving that rather than letting Benzema run into an open goal. So very, very unfortunate circumstances for Bayern Munich. And even Tolisso, I mean, Real Madrid, they pressed really high on that occasion for the one or two times in the whole game. I've never seen that again in the rest of the 90 minutes. But Tolisso should have actually cleared it before. Like, he shouldn't be in the position to, yeah, back pass it to Ulreich. And sometimes, you know, the back passes are just not perfect. So the pace of the pass was terrible. And Tolisso made a mistake, Ulreich made a mistake. And despite that goal, Bayern never dropped their heads, to their credit. But it was obviously a turning point in the whole tie.
A very messy start to that second half. And one of the factors, obviously, that didn't work in favour of the Germans was the injury list. Now, Manuel Neuer has been out all season, so Ulreich doing what he's done, this is just a brain fade. But another area where you wouldn't expect that Neuer would have made that error, of course, Robben missing after injury in the first leg. Lots of key elements. You mentioned Tolisso, a player who was okay for me on the night, but probably wouldn't get a start in other circumstances. So another contributing factor to, again, the exit of Bayern Munich here in the Champions League. Very unfortunate. We remember 12 months ago in the quarterfinal stage of the competition, Real Madrid, again, narrowly in extra time, took care of Bayern Munich, and they've done it again here. And the injuries just not coming at the right time, because they have worked against Munich here. But still, despite being underdone and undermanned slightly in comparison, by far, as you said earlier, Matt, the better side over the two legs. And I was watching the match this morning, really shocked the fact that I felt that Bayern Munich were in control in all areas of the park, a few mental lapses in concentration, as we've touched on, but it was one of the strangest bit most memorable ties I've seen between two of Europe's top clubs.
The other injury person or the player that didn't miss out in the second leg is Boateng as well. So he was injured. So you add that to the list as well. And Shula as well. I thought he did an admirable job coming in, substituting. I wouldn't blame him too badly. You are right, though. You would have thought that Bayern Munich were, say, up 4-1, 5-1 in the tie if you were to look at how they were playing. You know, like you said, they didn't put their head down. They kept on going. They kept on trying to get the result. It was just really, really surprising that ultimately it went against them.
Bayern Munich against Spanish opponents. What's happening? Because since winning the crown in 2013, they just have had no luck. Eliminated in five straight seasons by Spanish opponents. Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atleti, Real Madrid. That's the last five exits in this competition. 29% win rate against Spanish clubs since then, and a 75% win rate against the rest. Is there an issue with the way perhaps the Spaniards play their football, or is this just a coincidence given the recent dominance of Spanish clubs in this competition?
Yeah, I mean, the statistics suggest there is an issue by Munich playing Spanish teams, but I just go after like the latest games, and I don't think if you see those two legs that it was particularly an issue with Real Madrid being a Spanish team. It was an issue with Bayern Munich not converting their 50 chances that they had pretty much throughout both legs, and then they made a couple of mistakes, and on this high level, and credit to Real Madrid, you know, they are taking the opportunities. I mean, if you look at only this game from this morning, the 1-1, sorry, but Kimmich, he has to prevent the cross. Like, Marcelo has got, like, 5 minutes' time, and he's got a great left foot. He just crossed it in, and then Alaba is just ball-watching instead of watching where Benzema is. He steals away in his back, and there's an open goal. So Bayern Munich could have kept the 1-0 for much longer, and we just talked about the 2-1. I mean, that should never happen. Mm. And, yeah, you can say Real Madrid was very lucky, and I still think they were. But in those couple of key moments, Bayern Munich were just not there, just not switched on. And one of them was just after the 1-0. I mean, it was like the 1-0 was 4th minute and then the 1-1 in the 10th minute. And the other one, you come out of half-time and that happens. So it's obviously a little bit of a break in play for Bayern Munich or a break in the mental state because you just feel like you're right in it. We're the better team. The coach has just said some words being like it's 1-1. We just need one goal to go to extra time, maybe another to even like win it here within 90 minutes. And you know what? Last year, you mentioned the poor record. You know, yellow and red card, which wasn't one for Vidal. Then they went out in extra time, same at Bernabeu. Mm. And I say again, you know what? That yellow and red card last year wouldn't have been given if the game was at Munich. I think the referees are actually highly influenced playing at the Bernabeu. So they're intimidated. And I think you also saw that in this game. We're going to that handball. I think it was a clear penalty.
Well, that's right. Of course, there was that handball incident at 1-1 as well. So big incidents happening again involving Real Madrid in this competition. And look, Bayern Munich did have the chances that they could have taken in a couple of lapses, but there are these calls which are crucial, and that influence, again, another opportunity that maybe the referees have missed.
Right on half-time, so it was 45 plus one. And for me, it was, I don't know what your opinion is, for me it was a clear handball
clear
because
penalty.
He sticks his hand away from his body, and all of a sudden, if you score that penalty, of course, but there's a high possibility, you're going to half-time 2-1, and there's a completely different mood. You don't have to score anymore. Because, like, worst scenario is then you go to penalty shootout. So you already scored two goals at Madrid. You're even on aggregate. And the whole coach's speech, the whole mood, everything is different within the locker room. So I'm not saying it was solely, like, the referee's mistake. But you know what? I would go as far and say, like, if this was not at the Bernabeu, he would have given it.
I'm going to say a little bit more on that because even Marcelo, post-match, he actually said he would be lying if he admitted that the ball did not hit his hand. Clearly, if the own player is admitting to the ball being a handball in the box, well, then you're going to have to say either you bring VAR in, and we are all against VAR being introduced, especially in the Champions League, or it's a referee's mistake. And unfortunately, I think this one is the latter.
Yeah, and I believe if you see the replay, there's like three of the officials who can see that. So first of all, the referee who is actually right behind it, so he could see that. Then even a better view on the sideline, the assistant referee, and then this completely useless referee next to the goal. So I'm thinking for like the last 5 years or 10 years or since they've been installed, what is actually their job? Like all they do is sometimes point to the corner if it's a corner or a goal kick. But when it comes to those decisions, so the hand was closest to him. It was here, like towards the goal, the hand of Marcelo, and he was standing next to the goal. All he has to do is watch it. And he doesn't do anything in the whole game except from, yeah, it's a goal kick, it's a corner. So I'm really not sure what the role of these guys next to the goal is like back then as well when the clear handball of I think it was Henri against Ireland, and they just don't do anything. So I'm not really sure what their role is, if they're not allowed to overturn the main referee, or if they're just allowed to actually say if the ball was over the line or if it was a corner or a goal kick. But I think in certain situations, they have the best angle and then they should be able to say something, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I believe that referee, whether it's the fifth, sixth official, whatever they are, I believe they were brought in as the human eye for goal line technology initially. I think that was the issue there. But you're right, they should be able to overturn decisions because they've got a view from behind the goal, which the referee simply cannot have, the officiating referee on the pitch. So a huge missed opportunity. What a 30 seconds that is for Bayern Munich if you combine the end of the first half with the start of the second half. And you're right, it completely changes the mood, the team talk, the approach and everything. And obviously the goalkeeping error did not help that. So another really contentious decision made by referees at the Bernabeu with Real Madrid in the UEFA Champions League. But Real go through to another final. Jupp Heynckes said it post-game, at this level, sometimes things don't go your way, but you cannot make the mistakes we did. And that's how Bayern Munich will be remembering this match in the lead up to their new season, hoping to make amends for that. Because sure, results on the pitch could have gone their way in terms of some decisions made, and some luck with the injury side of things. It didn't, but the mistakes ultimately costing them a spot in a final four. What feels like some time now for the German clubs, because we haven't seen Munich in a final since that win, of course, in 2013. So it's been a long time despite their... It feels that the German clubs have been consistent in the competition. They have. Munich always go deep. But again, with that Spanish dominance recently, they have filled now 7 of the last 9 Champions League final spots. And Juventus, the only other club to have appeared in a final. Roma or Liverpool will join them, given tomorrow morning's encounter. But the Spanish side's really continuing their dominance in this competition. And I'm sure all Barcelona and Atletico Madrid fans were not happy with Real Madrid's win on the night. That is for sure. A couple of plays to highlight from the match. Keylor Navas, I was very impressed with. He's come under some criticism recently. 8 saves on the night, a highest personal tally for him in a Champions League knockout game. He was very important, particularly late on. There are a couple of stunning saves and defensive stops very late on by Real Madrid. I remember Varane with a beautiful stop on what seemed like a wide-open shot for James, and lots of attacking opportunities late for Bayern Munich as the pressure mounted. So Navas, certainly a great night for him. Zidane, again, it feels like he just makes those changes at the right time, and I think he got his substitutions right again. Real Madrid, his side, were not in control for large parts of the night. Casemiro and Bale brought on for Benzema and Kovacic with about 15 minutes to go. Casemiro really held on to the midfield, really ensured that, despite the Munich attacks mounting, really ensured that they could maintain some control on the night. Withdrew Asensio late on, a well-timed substitution. We've seen some managers make errors with their timing and substitutions. But again, Zidane, he's been as important as anyone. And the fact that Madrid go through in a tie without Ronaldo scoring in 180 minutes, it's only good signs for them for the final, and they will be heavy favourites. Doesn't matter if it's Liverpool or Roma in the final later this month.
Yeah, you're right. It does bode well that Ronaldo wasn't able to get on the score sheet over the 180 minutes. Yes, he did have that offside goal in the first leg that was struck off, but it was nice to see Real Madrid not rely on their Portuguese winger and superstar in order to get on the score sheet. So as for Navas, I'm going to be a little bit controversial. Considering the amount of pressure he's had on him, he had to perform. He's had to live up to all those
expectations. Fair time to step up, though, in a semi-final, second leg.
It's the same with Karim Benzema. It's the same argument that we've had with him all season. As much as we've wanted to see him score the goals, he's been about holding the ball up, being almost defensive as an attacker, and then being able to sort of spring and score those goals. And he's just piped up again. He scored his brace. He's done his job. Real Madrid fans love him at the moment, and he'll probably continue on and go on until next season and beyond.
At the other end for Munich, Lewandowski, not in red-hot form in this competition. Without a goal in 5, obviously really failed to assert himself in this tie. Where's he at?
Well, I think it's fair to say yesterday he was like the most ineffective of all Bayern players. I think every other player had a bigger influence in the game, one way or the other. I mean, Ulreich didn't have a great influence, but then Lewandowski, he just looked completely lost. Usually what he's so good at, like receiving the ball up front, and if he doesn't have a clear shot at goal, at least he's shielding the ball away from the defenders, keeping it, holding it, giving it back to the midfield to then, get another wave of attack. I don't know. There were rumors even like he might be dropped for this game, and Sandro Wagner would play from the start, because even in the Bundesliga, he's in very, very poor form. There's debate about his body language as well. You know, every time we come towards the end of a season, and we've been debating all the transfer rumors, in particular Lewandowski willing to go to Real Madrid and all that stuff, and it seems a little bit like it. Like, it seems just unusual for him. He seems lost up front. He's one of the best strikers in the world, I still think so. But yesterday, I don't know, like, if he wasn't on the pitch, I wouldn't have really noticed a difference. So he pretty much had no influence up front. I think Bayern Munich were very, very good on their left side with Alaba and Ribery. But all the crosses, if it was any dangerous, it was like Müller, sometimes James coming from the back. So Lewandowski didn't get any headers. He didn't get any shots on target. And he didn't even hold the ball up front. So he is a bit of a worry for Bayern Munich. And if this is any indication that he wants to leave, then he actually makes it very clear with his body language too. So he just seems a bit careless, like jogging around. It's not a very good look for Bayern Munich at this stage. And it's not a good look for Lewandowski to do it in these important games. I mean, I'm not saying he played bad on purpose, not at all. But I think he can play way better, and he knows that too.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, because those transfer rumours would have to be playing on his mind, and maybe they're not rumours, maybe more is done. So for a professional like Lewandowski and the level that he normally is at, it's very strange to see him like that.
But at the same time, one of the destinations that he is possibly going to is the club that Bayern Munich did play. So you probably want to, if you are going to Real Madrid or even prospectively want to actually turn up and put something on, whether you have to actually be a bit more effective than he was. So I don't quite understand. And didn't he do something similar as well when he wanted to leave Dortmund to go to Munich at the same time, where he sort of started to play up that little bit? He wasn't, you know, as sharp as he normally would have been. So is he doing the same thing again?
I mean, he kind of, when he went to Borussia Dortmund from Poland already, he said like, hey, look, either you let me go to Dortmund or I'm not going to play well for you anymore. So he's a little bit that kind of player who can do that. On the other hand, it's a little bit of a shame, because I kind of expected him to have a big influence and bounce back from that first leg. And I will never forget when Lewandowski actually played that Champions League, that famous Champions League leg against Real Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, I think it was 2013 or something. And they beat him 4-1 at home. Four goals Lewandowski against this very Real Madrid. So he can have a massive influence against this club. Unfortunately, yesterday, I think there were enough crosses in. So Ribery and Alaba completely destroyed the left defending side, right defending side of Real Madrid. They had no chance. But so many crosses came in, and I'm not sure if it was due like poor crosses or if Lewandowski just didn't do enough, but I think he should have at least get ahead to one of those 10, and it could be very dangerous. I think he's actually going to leave Bayern Munich. I'm pretty sure about it. I'm not sure if he still has to present to Real Madrid two games before the season finishes. I think if Real Madrid are really interested and they really want him, they're not going to say, oh, you played a bad game against us, we're not interested anymore. It's probably done and dusted by now if they are interested, and I'm pretty sure Lewandowski knows where he will be playing next season already, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be Bayern Munich.
It's certainly an exciting summer ahead, because there will be big movements at big clubs. You'd imagine the arrival or the potential arrival of Lewandowski could spell the end to a couple of big names at Real Madrid. Benzema and Bale certainly in line to move on. Benzema, of course, who scored a brace on the night, so that's a bit coincidental there. But Real go through, as I said, a 16th final. They're trying to win it for a 13th time. They are the best team in this competition, and they'll have another opportunity in Kiev later this month. Of course, that final live on Bein Sports, Bein Sports Connect. Don't watch it later on catch up. Watch it live. It's going to be a magnificent night in Kiev. Real Madrid, they will take on either Roma or Liverpool. Now, stay tuned, because that match tomorrow morning, we are closing in on that second leg. Liverpool lead 5-2. Roma with it all to do. We're going to preview all that match and plenty more still to come right here on the Euro Show on FNR Football Nation Radio.
He's not just graceful. He's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká.
Sports Connect, Australia's number one football streaming destination. The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the Euro Show here on FNR, Football Nation Radio. It is Champions League time. Roma and Liverpool to come tomorrow morning. One of those sides will join Real Madrid in the 2018 UEFA Champions League final, of course, played in Kiev later this month. Liverpool certainly in the box seat, guys. We know that 5-2 win in the first leg. They did lead 5-0, Roma pulling a couple back late at Anfield. Now, we discussed yesterday how significant that will be coming into this second leg, whether mentally that will affect or impact Liverpool at all, how Roma will approach the match. I think we're all sold in the fact that Roma certainly have to take it on from the first minute, as they did previously against Barcelona in the quarterfinal stage of the competition. And look, just as Bayern Munich did this morning, an early goal will be critical to Roma's chances. And you really feel that if they don't, then Liverpool will probably grow, probably score, and it may be a tall order for them if it already isn't. Now, Roma come into this match with a couple of key players out of the squad. Officially, it's confirmed. Kevin Strootman to miss through injury. Diego Perotti, who I believe was the most important player for Roma in that first leg, coming off the bench, that 15-minute cameo where he played a key role in the goals and all the attacking play laid on, they are certainly out. Perotti with an ankle, Strootman with a rib issue. So they're thin. So our argument yesterday about the fact that Roma must start well, must come to play, well, that is now increased by the fact that the bench will be very limited. Options on the bench will be limited. Confidence must be sky high from the start. But Liverpool will start their box seat to qualify for a first final. An exciting night for them as they go to the Stadio Olimpico and try to do what no other team has done in the Champions League this season, and that is score. And I'll tell you what, based on what I saw in the first leg, if anyone can do that, certainly can be Liverpool with all those weapons up top.
You are right. They probably will end up scoring a goal. I mean, it's going to be very hard for the Giallorossi to even shut down Liverpool from even having a shot on goal, let alone actually conceding one. At the same time, for Liverpool, there will be no Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. So whilst Strootman and Perotti are missing for Roma, the England international, unfortunately, has done his knee, won't be available for the Reds at all. So got a bit of a frog in my throat, unfortunately, after watching this morning's game.
Keep going. There's a bigger match to come tomorrow. Now, again, this is an interesting one because of the scoreline. We know that we've seen some remarkable turnarounds by Roma, of course, in the last stage. That Juve Madrid clash, also very entertaining. Last season, Barca PSG. We've seen these wonderful ties in recent seasons. The interesting thing here is that Roma have to approach this match in an unorthodox manner. And similarly for Liverpool, while they just need to go out and play a normal match and they will ease through to the final, also interesting how they react to, again, potentially conceding early. Or do they go all out? Do they expose themselves? Do they play their natural game knowing that they may exploit their back four, which isn't the strongest in the competition? Again, if Roma do come to play, from Klopp's perspective, does he absorb the pressure? Does he just go out there and instruct his men to play a normal game? They know that if they play a normal game, they've very rarely been defeated this season, let alone lost by three goals. I recall a 4-1 defeat at Tottenham earlier in the season, but with exception to that and that 5-0 away to City, their record has been impeccable. How do you think Klopp approaches this one against a sold-out Stadio Olimpico?
Now, surely he would be well advised to just let them know, play a normal game, because if he just changes his strategy right now, and this strategy has gotten him to the Champions League semi-final and maybe with 1 foot in the Champions League final if nothing extraordinary happens, why would he change it just for a game like this? And we debated it yesterday. They're very, very vulnerable in the back. So if he changes his style and say, hey guys, let's just sit back and defend and just wait for the counter-attack, I don't think they would do too well at that, because there is a massive danger they would concede early. As I mentioned, they're not that great in the back, and AS Roma would love that. They would love Liverpool to sit back and control the game and attack, and they would feel after like 5 or 10 minutes, hey, look, we can score here. They're not that great there in that area. So I think Klopp would do very, very well to let them know, hey, let's actually try to keep the play away from our defensive line as much as possible, because we're not that good there. He wouldn't say that to his players, obviously, but that's probably in his thoughts process, because, yes, their strength are definitely up forward. And if they can just keep the ball, yeah, like in their own lines, like keep possession, keep it in their midfield and then wait for the right moment for a sprint or for a Salah or for a Mane, I think that would be the play that Liverpool wants to play. And they can't really just wait and sit back and wait for Roma to come, because I think that's exactly what Roma want. And if they do that, there is actually a danger that Roma will come back into this tie very, very early. And that's what Liverpool want to prevent. So I think Jurgen Klopp would be very, very happy if it goes 0-0 into half-time, nothing happened. But on the other hand, he wouldn't want just to defend for 90 minutes because he knows as well as we do that it's not going to end well for Liverpool if they approach it that way.
Obviously, a very exciting tie awaits. This is what we love about Champions League football and these two-legged ties, because the unexpected can happen. Roma do require a miracle, make no mistake about that. But how much confidence do they take from the fact that they did defeat Chelsea 3-0 last year? They did defeat Barcelona 3-0 a fortnight ago. They have done this. They have done this. They will be confident they can do it again. But in those two fixtures, they did score early. I cannot emphasise how significant an early goal is for Roma, because Klopp's task will be to instruct his men to play their natural game and know that if they can replicate even a glimmer of what they did in that first leg, they will cruise through to the final without question. But Roma's approach, they have this confidence that they can do the unthinkable again. It has been a fairy tale run. They topped a group that no one expected them to top, let alone get out of, with Chelsea and Atletico Madrid and, of course, Karabakh from Azerbaijan. So they will have that belief. They came back against Shakhtar. They came back against Barcelona. They have not conceded a goal at home in this competition all season. That belief is there. Yes, they are a bit thin with a couple of key players missing through injury, but that belief is the factor I'm excited about seeing from a Roman perspective. But again, Liverpool for me will just approach their game normally and be confident, but that's why it's such an intriguing tie and really looking forward to the match.
You stole my thunder a little bit there in regards to coming back from Shakhtar, having gone to Ukraine down 2-1 to obviously progress. You also stole it in regards to Barcelona going down 4-1 but looking the better team, scoring more goals than Barcelona did on the night. Remember, it was 3-2, even though 2 were own goals. And then obviously now in the exact same position. But you just have to wonder with Roma, is this one too many bites of the pie compared to what they've done throughout the season? Can they actually get the next one and go to the next level? I mean, coming back 3 times is a very, very big task.
Yeah, probably. But look, the thing is, at this stage and the case in the quarterfinals, they have nothing to lose. And that is an issue, or that's an aspect of this tie, which we should not take lightly, because Roma literally have nothing to lose here. They were very poor in the first leg. They'll be very disappointed with that upon reflection if they are to be eliminated, no doubt. But at this stage, they've managed to give themselves a glimmer of hope. They come in against a side who they will fancy their chances of beating, but they know that another 3-goal win is a tall order. Releasing that pressure may bring out the best in the club. You don't know that. The issue for me is that I can't see Liverpool not scoring, and I can't see Liverpool becoming the sixth side this season not to score, just given what I saw in the first leg. Because, again, that 50, 55-minute period where they scored 5 goals, it could have been 10. And they just looked damaging every time they went forward. Salah, of course, returns to the Stadio Olimpico for the first time in a Liverpool shirt. I just can't see Liverpool not scoring, and that's where I think it will be interesting, because I can see Roma scoring. Roma, of course, 4-1 win at the weekend against Kiev, and Liverpool held 0-0 by Stoke. Of course, this is a different proposition for both sides, but I think there'll be goals. I just can't see Liverpool not scoring on the night. Of course, this is a repeat of the 1984 final, Roma's only appearance in the Champions League final, Liverpool winning on the night in penalties. So a bit of history between the two sides in this competition. Roma have not been back to a final since that was their only. Liverpool have had lots of success. And so for a very proud club like Liverpool, very exciting time and opportunity to make a first final since 2007, and a famous night awaits in Rome.
This is going to be the issue for me, is who is actually from Roma going to score the goals, because you are going to assume that Lovren and Van Dijk, or whoever the two centre-backs, whether it be Matip as well, are going to man-mark Edin Dzeko within an inch of his life. They are going to be so close to him that they are going to be breathing on him all night for those 90 minutes. Can you see anybody like a Patrick Schick? Diego Perotti, unfortunately, is out, so it means Cengiz Under would have to step up. Raja Nangolan or even a Daniele De Rossi scoring 3 or more goals. And that's going to be the big key issues. Can you see these players, minus Dzeko, scoring enough goals to get you through to the Champions League final?
No, I can. They've done it before. I can. And the player who will start, Under, the young Turkish player, will not start. He was very poor in the first leg. El Shaarawy will get the start, of course. He's had some moments in this competition, scored after 40 seconds against Chelsea in that 3-0 win at home. So El Shaarawy, Schick, who scored his first goal in Serie A at the Olimpico at the weekend. Dzeko, of course, is the key here. He is the absolute key. Doesn't matter if he's man-marked by two or three. Dzeko cannot have the performance that Lewandowski did this morning for Bayern Munich, because if Dzeko performs as Lewandowski did, Roma not as good as Bayern Munich to still put in a performance like that, no doubt.
And that's my fear. My fear is that they will, that Klopp and his assistants will come to the party and say, you know what? The one way that Roma can get through is by getting Dzeko free and scoring a goal and having a couple of moments of brilliance. If we can shut him down, we go a very long way to progressing.
If they go to shut the number nine in Dzeko down, that then exposes more area for Roma to work with at the back. The speedy El Shaarawy, Undert off the bench, Nainggolan coming through in an attacking midfield role, Schick as well getting inside. That presents more opportunities against the Liverpool back four who aren't great, particularly in the wing-back positions. The likes of Alexander-Arnold, Robertson, who have overperformed for me in this tournament, and they will only grow and become better for it. But that's where Roma can exploit Liverpool. They did not do that in the first leg until the final 10 minutes. That's where the areas can become available for them. But we saw against Barcelona, De Rossi scored, Manolas scored. They will be dangerous from set pieces. That's where I feel Roma can get their breaks. But again, they need to score early. And if they do that, it's tie on. But Liverpool with Salah, Firmino and Mane, we know the nightmare performances that Manolas, Fazio and Juan Jesus had in the first leg. I think Roma need to worry more about containing that trio as opposed to what Liverpool are going to do and who they're going to man mark. But certainly an interesting game. The other point I wanted to touch on now was we brought it up yesterday regarding Klopp's number two, Buvac, of course, the Bosnian individual who has been with Klopp for a long time. Now, we questioned how significant these developments would be for Liverpool and Klopp on the night. You guys suggested it wouldn't be too big of an issue, but essentially there were reports yesterday saying that Buvac, the number two of Klopp, had a falling out with Klopp and the club. The first report said he was quitting the club, but then there were reports saying he is left for personal reasons until the end of the season. The latest reports, though, through a Bosnian news agency. Now, the significance of the Bosnian news agency is that this is the same agency that broke the Klopp and Buvac story to Liverpool the day before Brendan Rodgers was sacked a couple of years back. They have now broken a story saying that Buvac will become the new Arsenal manager. He will be Wenger's replacement at the club for next season. So that may be the instigator for the falling out. One thing is for sure, he will not be there alongside Klopp in Rome for the first time in a long time. Do we think that will have any impact on Klopp and his squad?
I don't think it will have any impact, to be honest, but I'm very surprised about this development. So English newspapers have picked it up right now as well, and pretty much the headline is already Buvac agrees to replace Arsene Wenger. It would be a very, very surprising move, but I think it would be a pretty good move. I mean, he hasn't proven himself as a coach, but he's worked with Klopp for like 17 years and has been successful wherever they went. And Klopp described him once as the brain of the coaching staff that he has. So he's really like putting a lot on the table working with Klopp. So you always need a team, and Klopp is obviously like the face of the coaching staff, but Buvac is arguably like the most important part of it. It's a little bit like back then when officially Klinsmann managed the German national team, but Löw, as an assistant coach, was actually doing all the tactical stuff. I think it could be a little bit like that here as well. And he is reportedly craving a coaching career. I mean, after 17 years, you have been so successful, but Klopp was always the man getting all the praise. So maybe it's understandable that he wants to coach himself. And if all of a sudden an opportunity opens up, like coaching Arsenal London, that is a massive opportunity, huge. And that will be your first coaching gig after like 17 years as an assistant coach. Of course, Klopp isn't too happy with it because he thought, hey, we're a team, and then now is the opportunity is there and you're leaving me. But if this is actually going to be the case, I think for him it's a good reason to leave Liverpool, because coaching Arsenal at this stage is a very good gig. Like you're coming after Arsene Wenger. Everyone is looking forward to a new face, a new game style. And I think the player material at Arsenal is pretty, pretty good. So working with those and learning under Klopp, who knows? Maybe he will be a very good coach.
Yeah, it could be a revelation for Arsenal. Be very interesting to see Arsenal take on Liverpool in the Premier League next season. Very excited about that. Before we get to a break, as we always do, a quick prediction for the second leg with Roma needing to overturn a three-goal deficit.
I'm going to say both teams to score, but unfortunately Roma to only win 2-1.
No chance. 2-1 Liverpool.
2-1 Liverpool? You think Liverpool will go there? Okay, I'm with you, Rick. I think it will finish 2-1 to Roma. I just cannot see Liverpool failing to score on the night, given the fact that they are the highest scoring team in this competition this season. But regardless, I think both for Roma and Liverpool, irrespective of the final result in this tie, definitely the two standout performers, just given the expectations they have exceeded this season. So good luck to both sides. The victor, of course, to take on Real Madrid in the final later this month in Kiev. Klopp has said, "We are here to fight for our dreams." Another miracle, Di Francesco has admitted for Roma. It all kicks off 4:45 a.m. tomorrow morning local time, live on beIN Sports, beIN Sports Connect, or later via catch-up. Stay tuned. Still a little bit more to come as we wrap up another edition of the Euro Show right here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia.
He's not just graceful, he's strong and determined. And look at the acceleration. It's a wonderful run from Kaká. It's a wonderful goal from Kaká.
Yes, Raul! Zidane!
beIN Sports Connect, Australia's number one football streaming destination. The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back for the final time today. Some transfer stories to bring to your attention before we wrap up. I know everyone's excited for the second leg of Roma-Liverpool tomorrow. Of course, be sure to join us at the same time for a full review of that fixture. Cannot wait. But some transfer stories floating around now. Alvaro Morata, who has been linked away from Chelsea very strongly, and particularly these rumours growing with serious momentum since Conte's future has appeared over. I still think it's certainly over, but it's not confirmed yet. But Alvaro Morata, of course, formerly of Real Madrid and Juventus, Tuttosport in Italy have all but confirmed, a very reliable source in Italy, have confirmed pretty much that Morata will be the target for Juventus on a similar deal to what Juve have signed Douglas Costa on. So essentially, it's an initial two-year loan. They pay 10 to 15 million euro up front, two-year loan with an obligation to buy, eventually the fee being about 40 to 45 million euro. So a nice way to acquire a player, have him on loan technically, but then certainly will buy him and he will no longer be a Chelsea player. So that deal appears done. Obviously, if Morata does come in, that will mean one, maybe two players up front at Juventus will move on. We know they've already agreed terms with Emre Can of Liverpool. Morata set to make a return. And a few other players linked to moves back to Juventus as well. Paul Pogba, Arturo Vidal, the rumours are there. But this Morata one appears done. A bit of a loss for Chelsea, but that will open up some space and some money for Chelsea to spend. Who knows? I've even read reports about Lewandowski being potentially linked there as well. Obviously, that will be dependent on who takes over as coach, because Conte, very close relationship with Morata, won't be in the plans of the new manager or the club. So an interesting development there. While with Italy, Roberto Mancini, we announced yesterday, is all but confirmed as the new manager of the Italian national team, and the head of the Italian Federation, Roberto Fabricini, has confirmed that, saying yesterday we did meet with him. He's agreed that he's ready to join us and leave Zenit. We'll get into the details and salary on May the 13th. So Italy could have a new manager within a fortnight. We discussed it yesterday briefly, but it's a big appointment because it's an experienced manager who has been all around the world, not in the twilight, the latter stages of his career, but he's certainly achieved lots at club level. Again, I just doubt whether or not he's the best to develop the young talents coming through. That's my only hesitation with Mancini, but the reports are saying it is confirmed and he will be the manager of the national team. Back to Arsenal, we discussed that Klopp's number two, Buvac, will be appointed. That's what we're reading. This is on the back of these reports about Carlo Ancelotti. Now, Ancelotti, of course, with Bayern Munich earlier this season, he was strongly linked after turning down the Italian national team with a move to Arsenal. Apparently, the project was agreed, the terms were agreed, but his 10 million euro salary, the issue. In his time at Bayern Munich, Matt, were there any issues financially? Because I know that Bayern Munich are certainly a club who have money to spend, but don't spend as much money as the other big clubs around. Ancelotti may be a bit too demanding after a fairly unsatisfactory spell at Bayern Munich, particularly in the last season.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it depends on where you go these days, doesn't it? Like, if you go to England, you can demand almost like five or six times as much as if you go to Italy or Germany, I believe. And I think that speaks for Italy and Germany, because I just don't want to pay like all the money in the world to a coach who has a big name, Ancelotti, and he has had some success. But unfortunately, I would describe his latest tenure at Bayern as a failure. So he didn't really achieve what they wanted to. He didn't win the Champions League. I know Jupp Heynckes didn't do that now either, and Pep Guardiola didn't. But Bayern Munich are very well known not to pay players overs, and I really like that about Bayern Munich. So you can disagree within Germany, you know, it's a bit controversial. You love him or you hate him, because it's so one-sided when they win every season. And sometimes I get bored by it, I have to be honest. Like, I want a more competitive fight for the title, but they've done super well. They don't have, like, a monarch or someone behind it who just pumps money into the club. So they've worked for it. It's a little bit like Juventus as well. They're competitive internationally as well as nationally, and I think you really have to honor that. And Bayern Munich, you will never see Bayern Munich throwing like 50, 60, 70 million at one player or at one official. And I think that's a really good club strategy. So maybe sometimes that leads to the loss of a Lewandowski, who knows? But I actually really much appreciate it. And the examples of like a Man City or a Paris showed that, like, you know, money doesn't always talk, and you're not automatically successful in the Champions League if you have a lot of money.
That's right. And we said PSG very likely to win three titles this season, but an unsatisfactory campaign for them as well. So Ancelotti, no to Arsenal, according to the reports. Who knows where he goes, because not too many other clubs remain. And with the Italian national team job seemingly not his, not sure what his future holds. We know what the future holds tomorrow morning, though. Roma and Liverpool, as I said, be sure to join us for all the review from what should be an epic encounter. The second leg, Liverpool lead 5-2 on the verge of joining Real Madrid in the Champions League final. Look forward to doing it again with you two tomorrow, guys. But for now, from me, Adriano Del Monte, this has been the Euro Show on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football throughout Australia. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
The Euro Show with Adriano Del Monte on FNR, Football Nation Radio.